Today is Palm Sunday, which is the beginning of the Christian celebration of Easter.
That's right. Has it already started?
Yes, today is Palm Sunday. You'll find in the towns and in the cities of the Christian world, many people
carry... But the holidays begin after a few days, don't they?
Yes, that's correct. Mm-hmm. Yes, it's mainly the...
But the, officially, it is declared Christmas now.
Easter.
I'm sorry, Easter. Yes, that's right. Yes.
Well, mainly, my question is that Easter marks the beginning of the Christian festival of the trial, the death, and the resurrection of Jesus and his eventual ascension into heaven. But can you tell me why Muslims also believe that Jesus ascended to heaven?
Well, this question, although has taken a different deviation, should have been addressed right from the beginning as to the validity of this claim that Easter has anything to do with Jesus' birth or his so-called ascension, or has any right for the Christian era or year to begin on such dates. Because according to my study, and most Christian scholars of today agree with this, Christmas has no religious roots in Christianity. Christmas is so often used that automatically, you know, this is my fault. I speak of Christmas instead. But I mean Easter. And here if I make the mistake again, please correct me. Easter is it we are speaking about. Easter it is we are speaking about, okay? So Easter was a pagan festival handed down to the people of Judea, Palestine, etc. from the times immemorial. And it is the same festival, in fact, which under different guises is celebrated all over the world, because this is the time when the spring harvests are ready to be reaped. So in Punjabi we say Dranti Lag Gai, when the first people reach the crops and begin to reap it. That is the day of Easter, in fact. And the celebration is a sort of thanksgiving to God for the wonderful crop of the spring. We started coming home, God took care. I mean, this is the spirit behind, underneath. God took care of all the crops until they ripened and until they reached home safely, etc. So they celebrate this in the Punjab as Basant, in India also as Basant. And Basant has this relationship, although it's a Hindu festival, but also this has a relationship to this spring crops. And elsewhere in the world also, we understand. But the Christian scholars of today who know the subject are all united in this belief that this is not a celebration of Christian origin. As far as the birth of Jesus Christ is concerned, it has absolutely no relationship with it, because his birth took place in the autumn rather than the spring, at a time when the date palm trees were ready with their fruits to shed. And there is other evidence also growing that the Christmas, which is related to the birth of Jesus, is also wrong. It has no roots whatsoever in Christianity. So neither Easter nor Christmas are Christian in their true nature. They are festivals of a different type, festivals of the pagans, or let's say human festivals, not pagan, because they are related to nature, to periods of crops ripening. So they are the festivals. And in the case of Christmas, it was the festival of the sun god, which was being celebrated in those days by the Roman concept of deity, the Roman people, in accordance with their concept of deities. They also believed in a sort of trinity. And the sun god played the most central role in that.
That was Sol Invictus.
Yes, Sol Invictus, that's right. So that is the reason why it is suggested that in the Council of Nicaea, what was the name of the Roman emperor?
Constantine.
He was a believer in that sun god. And that is why he held that council in a town which was specifically related to the sun god having some relation with that area, or some deity having been born there. So it is established that it was because of that Roman tradition that Christ also got in some way related to the sun god. And the celebration also has that connotation in it. Now, coming to the question which you raised based on this, would you kindly repeat it?
I'd like to know that Christians...
Why Muslims believe in the ascension of Jesus Christ?
How have they come to believe in that?
First of all, again, let me point out that even Christians have no right to believe in any ascension, because those verses of ascension, those verses which refer somehow to ascension, are from Luke, last 12 verses, Mark or also Mark, both. Mark and Luke, both are mentioned to have spoken of ascension. And it is now established after full investigations by Christian scholars that those last 12 verses, are they in Mark or in Luke?
Mark.
In Mark. But also in Luke there is a reference which I don't exactly remember. But the Mark, I'm positive, the last verses which allude to, which refer to Jesus' ascension, are proved to be spurious, finally and absolutely. So what right have they got to believe in ascension anyway? So the ascension idea of Jesus Christ found its way into the Muslim beliefs from Christian stories, I believe. And what reason they had to accept those stories lay in the mention in a hadith, or many hadith books, many traditions, by Hazrat Muhammad Rasulullah Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, that Jesus, son of Mary, would descend in the latter days. So these two ideas got mended into one. They received these stories from the Christian world that Jesus was seen ascending to heaven. So the concept of ascent was already there. But there was no mention of Jesus' ascent either in the Quran or in any tradition. But they found mention of this, of the descent of Jesus from the heavens in Hadith. Now, the word descent is used, which is the meaning of nazala, or he made him to descend, anzala. And I have already spoken at length on this. The word nuzul, when referred to animals and human beings, and when God is the one who causes the nuzul, then without fail, the reference is to a special blessing related to these things, never a bodily descent. So they had no right to believe in the descent as literal descent either. And to base on that concept of descent, the idea of ascent is very far-fetched.
To assume, because there is a descent is mentioned, there must have been an ascent.
That's right.
Yes.
Now, the Holy Prophet never mentioned any ascent. That's the interesting part. He repeatedly speaks of descent, but never ascent. But descent, when we say descent, it should not be understood in the connotation as it is understood by the Christians in application to Jesus Christ. Because descent is a term of the Holy Quran which strictly applies to such things as have very special benefit for the mankind. So the same word nuzul has been used in the Quran in application to the what would you say translate as an'am,
cattle
of all form, you know, and sheep, etc. Does the word cattle include sheep in English? That is why I hesitated.
I wouldn't say so.
It doesn't say.
No.
So there is not a single word as a translation for an'am. An'am applies to those quadruped who give milk and whose meat is also eaten and consumed. So they include sheep up to the camels.
Mm.
They are an'am. Mm. According to the Holy Quran, God made them descend. Then there is iron. You know iron,
yes,
of course, is ore, iron ore.
Yes. Mm.
The Holy Quran clearly mentions it that we caused the iron to descend. Then, of course, among the prophets, there is the Holy Prophet of Islam himself. The Holy Quran uses exactly the same word of descent in application to Hazrat Muhammad Rasulullah Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. Of all the prophets, he is the one prophet who is chosen to be, whose advent is chosen to be described with the word descent. No other prophet has been mentioned as descending except he. The Quran descended, the books descend. Now, of all the books, which are the best, which are most beneficent and most useful for the mankind? Divine books, obviously. So, divine books are mentioned to have descended. And out of all things, of all the minerals, etc., and the metals, which one is the most useful for the mankind?
It's iron.
Iron, obviously. Yes. So, iron is mentioned to have descended. And then again, out of all the animals, which have served the cause of humanity far more than others? Cattle, and sheep, and goats, and camels, and all these things. And they are the ones, among all the animals, who have been singled out to have spoken of as having descended. So, meaning becomes very clear and obvious and more obvious. Then you come to all the prophets. As Muslims, of course, we have no hesitation to say that all the prophets who all came for the benefit of mankind, the one who excelled in this, who was the most beneficent for the mankind, was Holy Prophet of Islam. So, in the Quran, there is no mention of Jesus descending. Only one person, one prophet of Allah, is mentioned to have descended, and that is the Holy Prophet Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. So, these Muslims who believe in the ascent of Jesus Christ, they have absolutely no reason, no ground to believe. Because as I've told you, their argumentation is based on the word descent. And I have already exposed this word.
Yes.
Descent means this. And the Quran does not mention Jesus Christ to have descended. The Holy Prophet is mentioned. So when there is no ascent mentioned in the Quran, no ascent mentioned in the Hadith, no descent regarding Jesus Christ is mentioned in the Quran, then the meaning of the Hadith would be understood in the light of the Quranic terminology, not in the light of any other terminology. And that is simply this, that in the latter days, when Jesus comes again, in whatever form he comes, he would have, he would serve the most useful purpose for rehabilitating moral values and divine values in the world. Right? So what has it got to do with Easter?
Not very much.
Not very much. But one thing I tell you, one thing I remembered which surprises me about the Jews as well as Christians, that there was, of course, the concept of baptism present in all religions. As far as I have studied, in every religion there is this sort of concept of baptism. But why did the Jews wait until the Easter time for those who had got converted to Judaism to be baptized? They kept them waiting, and this practice started sometime later in their history. I think about 200 to 300 years before Christ. But prior to that, I don't remember having read this mentioned. But this is a fact, what I'm telling you, that although in the beginning this baptism was meted out to the person the moment he accepted Judaism, later on they would not give baptism to such a person until the time of Easter. And at the time of Easter, this service was done. In Christianity, although Jesus Christ himself was baptized by John the Baptist, but this practice ultimately was, declared non-Christian by Paul and his followers. Although I have read Paul having mentioned baptism, but in a different way. The concept of baptism, which we find in Judaism, has not been followed entirely. That is what I mean. A deviation was done, and because Paul wanted Christianity to be completely severed from its roots and old stem, so instead of immersing the body in water or giving the person a bath, what he did was sprinkling of water was substituted for this baptism. And yet it is surprising that all the rest of the Judaism were rejected but baptism. But the way Jesus was baptized, that is what I'm pointing out. He was immersed in water. And this reads sense, because baptism means cleansing of body as well as that of soul.
Yes.
And as such, you can't sprinkle water and cleanse the body. So the Jewish practice had some reason, and some sound reason for that matter, of immersing people. And this is why John the Baptist changed the practice of just immersion into a thorough bathing in river Jordan. You know, he shifted his offices to there, and said that they should be bathed fully, and they should be submerged. That is why you read about Philippian and a Abyssinian eunuch, you know, being given baptisma in Jordan River, and they were properly, you know, soaked and dipped repeatedly. So these are the things which the mention of Egypt brought to my mind. And here, instead of you asking me a question, I am asking you a question. Why did you ever try to understand why the practice of baptism was accepted by Paul but altered in its nature? Why was that?
I imagine it was so that it would be a more of a visible sign of someone being converted to a new faith, by making more of a demonstration of the fact that they were breaking their links with the past and joining the new in a public demonstration.
Yet he made other amendments as well. For instance, circumcision was associated inseparably with baptisma of a person who came from a different faith. And he was not only immersed in water or made to take bath, but also was circumcised. But St. Paul, did away with this practice as well, didn't he?
Mm. I think probably the link is there, because from my understanding, the very early Hebrews, Judaism was a missionary faith, but if anybody wanted to join, they had to make such a wholehearted adoption of Judaism,
right,
that even males had to agree to circumcision.
That's right.
Because the Hebrews were tribes constantly defending themselves.
May I just continue that very slightly? And could it be that the Muslim world have been misguided into thinking of the ascension of Hazrat Isa, alayhi salatu wasalam, by the verse that I will raise you to me, taking it literally rather than raising in status?
No, that is also the one verse which I have discussed repeatedly in so many other question-answer sessions. So it came to my mind, but I thought then we will be diverting this debate to a channel from which will be no coming back.
Okay.
It's a long discussion.
Yes.
But now that you have mentioned, I speak very briefly on this. The focal point of that verse, which is mentioned in relation to the ascent of Jesus, is Bal rafa'ahu Allahu ilayhi. He was not neither murdered nor crucified to the point of death. This is how we understand the message of the verse as preceding it. But it ends up in the conclusion, Bal rafa'ahu Allahu ilayhi. God raised him to himself. And the main point of strength which the non-Ahmadis believe they possess, is the word bal. They say, what you thought is wrong. That did not happen. On the contrary, this is what happened. So they say that what you thought was that he was crucified. And the Holy Quran rejects this idea as absolutely, positively wrong, and presents a counter idea, which is, he lifted him to the heaven. Mm. This reads sense, according to this they say.
Yeah.
But let's turn back to the verse and the context. The Holy Quran is speaking in the beginning of the Jewish claims that Jesus was a false prophet for two reasons. One, that his mother was unchaste, and his, the outcome of illegitimate relationship. Secondly, that we succeeded in killing him on the cross. The stress was on the killing, because it was said that whoever would hang by the tree and died would prove it. The fact would prove that he is a false claimant.
He would be accursed.
That's it. I'm coming to the word cursed.
Mm.
This, the ultimate message we draw from this discussion of the Quran is that on the one hand there were Jews who claimed that we proved that he was accursed by God. His birth was accursed, and his death end was. The counter to this is not raising somebody to heaven. It's not the opposite of it. The opposite of it is that God blessed him, raised his status. He was not rejected by God and condemned to hell or any other position of God's wrath. He was rather even more loved by God, by the sacrifices offered. So that is the spirit in which we understand the meaning of Balrafahu Loyla. But that is not all. There is more to it. The question is, if he was raised to heaven physically, in a heaven of the dimensions known to us, then what should have Allah said? Allah should have said, but we did not make him die, first of all, but he is alive. The opposite of death is not ascension to heaven. We did not make him die, but he is alive. All through the discussion, the word life does not appear at all. It says what they claim is wrong. And they claimed that he was killed at their hands, and he had an illegitimate birth. So the rejection is only of the claims of the Jews. Now, if the rejection was of the very concept of his death by any means, then God should have concluded, no, neither at their hand nor at the hands of the Roman Empire. He did not die. We did not permit anybody to kill him. Or we did not even cause that death ourselves. This last bit is missing. On the contrary, this phrase is used, Bal Rafa'ahu Allahu Ilayh, which I have already mentioned, is the opposite of the curse. It's a blessing to be close to God. Now, again, this verse cannot be interpreted in the literal sense at all. Because God doesn't say, we lifted him to heavens, to the sky. God says, we lifted him to ourselves. And where was God at that moment? And where was he not?
Yes.
Lifted him to ourselves. Was God not there at the moment when Jesus was being crucified? Closer to his jugular vein.
Yes.
Was there?
Yes.
So his body doesn't move. Body simply cannot move in the direction of God because everywhere. So that is the point which you should,
yes,
you know, as a rebuttal to those who try to deceive you,
yes,
you should confront them with. You say, tell me, where is the bodily motion involved? Where is it mentioned? How can it be entertained?
Yes.
There is also the other famous verse in Surah Maryam, where Jesus said, peace be upon me, the day that I shall die, and the day that I shall be raised up again.
Yes.
And the order of the verse clearly states that Jesus must die first before he's raised,
yes,
up.
Yes, that's right.
In a slightly different context.
I know, there's so many other verses. I thank you for reminding me of this. But they say, yes, here the ascension, it is not the ascension which is mentioned, it is the resurrection which,
yes,
is mentioned. And they say the resurrection would take place after Jesus descends to the earth, dies normally, and then after death, he is resurrected. So they have a way of, you know, wriggling out of this, the clutch of this verse. But the ones which I generally present, there is absolutely no way they can escape. That is, Ma Muhammadun illa Rasul, qad khalat min qablihi Rasul, Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam is no more than a prophet. And all prophets before him have passed away. And then, speaking of Jesus Christ in the same terms, the Holy Quran says, Mal Masih ibn Maryam illa Rasul, qad khalat min qabli Rasul, Masih, son of Mary, was no more than a prophet. And all prophets before him have passed away. So how can Masih be left hanging in the middle, you know? In nowhere, belonging to nowhere. Neither to his past prophets nor to the past prophets from Rasulullah sallam, the vantage point. So he has to go. There's no way he can be left behind in the earth. They say, all right, we mean he went up to the heaven. I said, no, this is not what the verses say. The verses say, all prophets before him have passed away. How did they pass away?
They all died.
Died. All prophets before Prophet Muhammad passed away. And how did they pass away? Here, the Holy Quran makes it crystal clear. by saying, Afa'im mata, O khotelan qalabtum ala aqabikum. So if also the Holy Prophet died, mata, no ascension is mentioned, or even murdered, what right have you got to turn on your heels? Because khala, the word khala, which means passed away, here has been translated by the Holy Quran itself. Just two possibilities, two connotations are mentioned, no third one. And as far as the Jesus' verse is concerned, the verse which speaks of Jesus, all prophets before him having died, the verse goes on. It doesn't end there. It says, "Wa ummuhu siddiqa," his mother was chaste. Kana or true or righteous, either way it can be told. Kana yakulani tam. Both mother and son used to eat, no longer eat. So if mother was not alive, she was dead, and Jesus was alive somewhere in the heaven, why did he stop eating? Why was he exempted from those who stand in need of eating? That is how the whole story, you know, the story is completed. The last point of escape they try to open for themselves lies in the direction that because he's in somewhere where he doesn't need to eat. We need to eat here because it is the situation of the earth, its atmosphere, etc., which makes it essential for us to eat for the sustenance of life. But first of all, this is just meaningless, totally, absolutely absurd. Food is needed because in metabolism, one is constantly losing energy. Even if you think, you lose energy. And a major part of loss of energy is related to the brain activity. So we'll accept him to be exempted from those who need food to survive if you accept that his metabolism has come to a total dead end, to the extent that he has no brain activity left. And this is death. Nothing but death. This is what we point out.
Yes, yes.
So instead of catching your ear from the other side, why don't you catch it from the right in the right direction, from the right side? He has to be dead if he stopped eating. Because human body continues to metabolize. And it is catabolism which causes the loss of energy in so many ways and forms. So you can go into hibernation, of course. But still your heart will be beating, your lungs will be moving slowly, slowly, and your mind will still be active. So a loss of energy, if not completed within 2-3 years, let's extend it to 10 years in the case of Jesus. No more. Impossible. But the Holy Quran has its own answers. The Holy Quran in another verse says that we have not created any prophet with a body which can survive without eating. So not only he has to lose life, but he has also, according to their belief, lose his prophethood. Because no prophet is given a body by God which can survive without eating. So when he was taken to somewhere, was he still a prophet or not?
Yes, yes.
He was, according to them. It is, kufr, denial of the fundamentals of faith. If you believe that a prophet once raised to the prophethood loses this office even for a moment, no way can they escape. These two verses stand guard over not the life of Jesus, death of Jesus.
Thank you, Azul.